Well, why don't you turn back with me to Genesis, beginning at chapter 23. Whenever Vincent leads, he always seems to get the passages with the tough names. That's entirely my fault and entirely coincidence, I assure you. I shall have to bribe him next time to lead, but very grateful for reading of those passages as we draw towards Abraham's latter days. We've reached the penultimate message in this little series on the life of Abraham. We'll look at the last events of his life today, and then next Sunday, God willing, we'll look at some themes that the New Testament draws to our attention and to our benefit from the life of Abraham. But as we reach these last events of his life, it's been quite a journey, hasn't it, as we've studied the events that the Lord has led him to face. His life has had its ups and downs, for sure. He is the great example of believing faith to us, but also there have been many failures and inadequacies and flaws along the way, hasn't there, in his life. What will be the final theme? What's the final word we'd have to say about him? I never quite know how people choose their final sentence or statement to go onto their gravestone at the end of their lives. Here's a few that I've seen. I conked out. Somebody chose that for their gravestone. He died with a beer in his hand. Not quite sure I'd like that to be my last statement, but that was somebody's summary statement of their life. Well, how about this one? A little bit better. A loving, devoted father. That wouldn't be too bad, would it? Fathers, to have that upon your gravestone. Or here's another one. A soldier of Jesus Christ. Read that on a gravestone. That's probably the best of them all. Of those ones that I quote. What would yours say? What would be the summary of your life, I wonder? Well, in these last pages of this middle section of Genesis, we see some summaries of how Abraham lived in his latter days. We get something of where he's come to by the end of his life. I wonder if you've picked up the big parallel that's been going on through all of Abraham's days. The parallel throughout all of his story that his physical journeying was only one of the two journeys that Abraham went through. The other, of course, was his spiritual pilgrimage. And Abraham was journeying all through his life. It wasn't just when he was called from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to that far distant land. That wasn't the only journey that Abraham faced, although that was probably the longest initially. But all through his days in this land of Canaan, he was journeying. He was moving physically and spiritually. It was a journey of learning to trust God. It was a journey of looking to him and sometimes failing him. It was a journey of discovering what it meant to be God's people, even in the midst of difficult times. And Abraham had to learn in his heart how to trust God, just as you and I have to do that. He's been on both of those journeys, one just mirroring, as it were, and signalling the other. Just as we're on two journeys too. One is about our lives, it involves our days and the people we meet and the places we go and the words we speak and the events we face. We're living those kind of journeying lives, but also in our lives we face this spiritual journey about spiritual growth. And that involves faith and prayer and the trust of God. And it involves learning more about him in the midst of the circumstances. Isn't it sad that far too many of us, we focus on our outward journey. And we miss so often that spiritual journey through this life. As we were to learn more and more of God. Well, I want to draw some lessons from these three passages that Vincent read to us. These three chunks. The first in Genesis 23, verses 1 to 6. This, a very tragic event in the life of Abraham. But even in this, we see him seeking to trust God and to honour him in the midst of a great trial. Last week was a great test, wasn't it? In chapter 22, when Abraham was called to sacrifice his son Isaac, if the Lord would require it of him. And we saw that he passed that test. He was willing to offer even his son, if God called him to do that. But God spared Isaac, you remember. But here in Genesis 23, we see that he loses his wife, Sarah. I wonder if there are any more difficult experiences in life than losing your spouse, your life partner, maybe half of yourself. Some of you here this evening have been through exactly that experience. You know how Abraham must have felt when it so easily says, Sarah lived to be 127 years old, and she died at Kiriath Arba in the land of Canaan. And Abraham went to mourn for Sarah and to weep over her. Of course, she'd lived a long life. 127, that's pretty old. I guess not many of us will see that kind of age. Abraham, by this point, was 136. He was just a few years older. So Isaac, 36 years old. So some time has moved on since Isaac was a young boy in chapter 22, you remember. Perhaps a young boy of 8, 9, 10, something like that. So years have passed on, and here Sarah dies. But despite her great age, there was great mourning. It didn't stop the flow of tears and sadness, verse 2, did it? Abraham here mourning for Sarah, weeping over her. Nothing ever stops that mourning, does it, when it's true and real and from the heart. And there's nothing wrong with appropriate mourning, of course. It's given by God as a way that we should grieve, as a way that we should feel the brevity of life and the great loss of things when they're taken from us. It's a way to mourn our shortness of life and the moving on and the passing on. It's a way to give us a pang and a longing in our hearts for eternity that will never pass away. Abraham indeed grieved for Sarah here. And although Isaac's not specifically mentioned in this passage, we know that he grieved too for his mother. Over in chapter 24 and verse 63, we see him out in the field meditating. Chapter 24, verse 63, he went out to the field one evening to meditate. And we're not told what he was meditating upon, but you can't help but to imagine that Isaac there would perhaps be grieving over his mother. And we know that's so because at the very end of the chapter there in verse 67, you see when the servant eventually brings to him his wife, Rebekah. It mentions there in verse 67, so she became his wife and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So for both Abraham and for Isaac, this was a real trial, the loss of Sarah. Sarah had been a faithful and a godly woman, by and large, hadn't she? She'd been chosen by God to mother the whole of this great people that God was bringing through Abraham. And apart from that one incident, you remember in chapter 16, that incident with Hagar when Sarah was complicit with Abraham in an act of disobedience to seek to create the child of promise ahead of God's timing. Apart from that one incident, Sarah is such a great example to other women. How to follow their husbands. How to be an example to their husbands. How to be spiritual. How to believe and have faith. How to be bold and yet submissive. How to be strong and yet work alongside a believing husband. Sarah's a great example to us in all of these ways. You remember Peter takes Sarah as a great example to women, doesn't he? 1 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6. 1 Peter 3, verses 5 and 6. Here is Sarah used as an example to godly women. For this is the way the holy women of the past, who put their hope in God, used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. So let us take Sarah as an example, not giving way to fear, but trusting God even in the midst of difficult times. Back in Genesis 23, we won't look at it all, but the most of the chapter revolves around Abraham trying to get hold of a burial site for Sarah. He ends up buying the land from one of the local inhabitants, and the location of the land is hugely important. He didn't go and bury Sarah in their homeland back in Mesopotamia. But we do read in other places of the Bible of people carrying their dead back to their homeland. But for Abraham, he didn't bury Sarah back where they came from. Notice, verse 4, he said to the Hittite, "I am an alien and a stranger among you. Sell me some property for a burial site here so that I can bury my dead." Be quite appropriate, wouldn't it, for Abraham to have taken Sarah way back to where they came from? That's so many people do that. You remember Princess Diana's coffin being flown home from Paris where she died. And home, not just for this huge semi-state funeral that we held, but then taken back to that estate where she grew up as a child. Back to that estate and back to that little island where her coffin was taken over and she was buried, where she played as a child. Taken back to her upbringing. Soldiers who lose their lives on the battlefield, their bodies are flown home, aren't they? For burial, where they're from, with their families. But Abraham didn't do that here. Notice his faith, even in the midst of his loss. He was calling this land of Canaan his new home. He's still an alien, verse 4. He's still a stranger. He's not inherited the land yet, but God had led him here. They'd lived all of their life journeying and traveling, Sarah with him. And they were looking to God and trusting God that this would be the place that all of their descendants would inherit. So here's Abraham in this massive act of faith saying, "I'm going to lay my wife to rest here. For though this is not the land of my people yet, this is the land of my people that God has promised, and I will lay her here so that in the future our descendants will know that we have put our stake down and that we have lived and died here." He's starting a whole new family custom to trust God and to bury his family here in the land that God has sent them to. Notice that even in the midst of his sorrow and his tragedy, his faith has not flown away. Friends, this is a great lesson to us. So often when we're racked with grief, with pain, with loss, with tragedy, faith can so easily fly away. But Abraham's didn't. He's an example to us here. Even in his grief, he trusted in the promises of God. Can I say to you, my friend, in the midst of your grief is exactly the time that you may need the promises of God the most. In the midst of intense pain in your family or mine. In the midst of days when we lose control, as it were, of so many of our faculties. They may be the days, they may be the hours, where we need to trust the far-off promises of God, even when we cannot see them. And that's what Abraham was doing here in laying Sarah to rest here in the place. Now, of course, he struggled to get the plot of land because they wanted to give it to him. He wanted to buy it so that he wasn't a burden to any. And verse 4, you see, he asked the Hittites, "Sell me some property." But, of course, they wanted to give it to him. It's an incredible description, verse 6. This is the reply of the Hittites to Abraham. "Sir, listen to us. You're a mighty prince among us. Bury your dead in the choicest of our tombs. None of us will refuse his tomb for burying your dead." They didn't want his money. They wanted to give him the burial site. Such was Abraham's reputation among the people. A mighty prince among us. Incredible, isn't it? This was the man to whom the land was to be given. The Canaanites were, as it were, only renting their own property. God had given it, the title deed, into Abraham's hands and his descendants in the future. But they wanted to give him this particular land. What a challenge to us to live on somebody else's patch and yet still to be respected. Abraham was here. Will people say of you at the office, "You are a mighty prince among us"? We live in a battleground. We're aware of the spiritual battle. And Abraham certainly had his days of battle. But he still won the hearts and the respect of the people. Even though he lived a different way with a different goal. And it's a huge challenge for us. So that at our moments of grief and difficulty, people around us know that we are those who have won respect in their midst. Have our lives been conducted in such a way that people respect our confidence in God? We are their Bible for many. They read our lives. And this particular place that Abraham wanted to lay Sarah to rest at, Mamre, was a very special place. It was a field and a cave in Machpelah near Mamre. Why did Abraham choose this particular place when he laid her to rest there? You'll see verse 19 of that chapter. Afterwards, Abraham buried his wife Sarah in the cave in the field of Machpelah near Mamre, which is at Hebron, in the land of Canaan. Why did he bury her there? Special place, Hebron. Well, he laid her in a place that was very dear to his own heart. It was there that Abraham built the altar to God in chapter 13. It was there in chapter 14, at exactly that place where he first heard the news that Lot had been taken hostage, you remember? And he went off to rescue Lot and mount that incredible rescue mission to save people who had been carried away hostage. It was exactly there in chapter 18 where the Lord came to visit him with the angels. And it was exactly there where he'd first heard the details of his son to be born. A year later, it was a special place to him. It was a place of spiritual intervention, a place of great memory, a special time, special times in his life where the Lord had drawn near to him. And so it was there that he wanted to lay Sarah to rest. And I wonder, as we look back at our lives, what are the special times and special places that we have enjoyed? Things that we've done, things that we've achieved, or moments where God has drawn especially near. I pray that all of us tonight would have times in our lives where we can look back, and even in the midst of our difficulties, we can say that was a place where God drew near to me. Maybe in this year ahead, there will be special moments for you, the like of which you've not experienced before, where the Lord draws very near. And underlines a promise to you, or warms your heart strangely, or ministers to you, or speaks a word to you, a special word, or calls you in a powerful way. May our lives be full of such moments, and may we build our journeying around them. Abraham showing great faith, even in the death of his wife. And then chapter 24. Verses 1 to 8, still in the theme of passing on after his death. Abraham is now old, you'll see, chapter 24, verse 1. And he realizes he needs to find a son for Isaac, his wife. I better say it the other way around. He needs to find a wife for Isaac, his son. And there in verse 1, we have this wonderful coming together of these two journeys of Abraham. Notice there his spiritual journey and his physical journey coming together. 24 verse 1. Abraham was now old and well advanced in years. He journeyed a long way. And the Lord had blessed him in every way. What a tremendous thing to be able to say about someone advanced in years. That God had blessed him in every way. Tremendous. He's 136 here. But please let us never ever think that that being old must mean being worn out. Or being weak, or being useless to God, or in the church. We don't believe that here, and I hope you don't either. We say a categoric no. Abraham was advanced in years, but he was blessed of God. It's true that we talk a lot about children and young people and our hopes for the future, and that we will win them for Christ and establish their generation early to follow God. Of course that's true, and we have all those longs. But my friend, how great it is to grow old with God. How great it is to be blessed of God in older age too. How great it is to be closer to heaven probably. How great it is to have so many more examples of God's goodness to in your life. So many more examples of God's answer to prayer. So many years of testimony to God's blessing and to God's faithfulness. So many situations where he's intervened and helped you that you can share with others. My friend, if you can say that you are advanced in years and have been blessed by God, you are very useful to him. Very useful to this church. Very useful to the young. Very useful to your fellow Christians. And very, very useful to God. May God use your spiritual and life journey to be a great testimony to God's blessing and to God's faithfulness, that you might pass on to others the spiritual lessons that you have known and that God has taught you. And that's really what Abraham is seeking to do all through chapter 24, to pass on. His thoughts turn to Isaac. He's old in years. He realizes that he's soon to die. And he wants to pass on to Isaac the blessings of trusting God and having a godly wife. And so he has this plan to instruct his servant. He takes his chief servant in verse 2 and he instructs him as to how to go out and to seek a wife for his son Isaac. It's a lovely story, isn't it? Chapter 24. We're not going to look at it all tonight. That's a different remit, really. But we're just going to think of what moving faith this shows all round as Abraham seeks to want the best for his son here. Seems a very strange chapter to our Western eyes, doesn't it? Our 21st century Western eyes, as he instructs the son, the servant to go and to find a lady, not from the Canaanites, but from his own people, and get a wife, verse 4, go to my country and my own relatives and get a wife for my son Isaac. Seems very strange, doesn't it, for parents to get a wife. We did a bit of research when we were in Pontefract of all the young people there about how much on a scale of 1 to 10 they fancied their parents choosing their wives for them. And I didn't tell you what the scores were, but they weren't much higher than 0. They didn't like the idea at all. But it was the norm in those days for Abraham to choose a wife. And notice his act of faith. He didn't want a wife for his son from pagan people. He didn't want a wife for his son from idol-worshipping people. He didn't want a wife for his son that didn't know God. He didn't want a wife for his son that could carry him through the journey of life, but not through the journey of spiritual faith and trust in God. He didn't want that for his son. He wanted Isaac to know that following God was the greatest thing in life. Just as you should want for your own sons and daughters, as I should. We should want for our children the very greatest thing, those to lead them and to guide them and to help them in the spiritual journey through life. And what confidence he had, verse 7. The Lord, the God of heaven, who brought me out of my father's household and my native land, and who spoke to me and promised me an oath, saying to your offspring, I will give this land. He will send his angel before you so that you can get a wife for my son. From there, Abraham is supremely confident that God will guide the servant to the wife of his choosing. Contrast that to that incredibly ridiculous way that Abraham described to Abimelech, you remember in chapter 20, how God had brought him there. Do you remember? Well, God caused me to wander long way from home and I ended up over here. It was just a sort of a really terrible description of how he got there. Chapter 20, verse 13. God caused me to wander from my father's household. It's just so bare and naked, so lacking in faith. Well, contrast that with him speaking now to his servant. You see, he's moved on. Abraham has learned to trust God. The years have gone on. God has been faithful to him. He's been through these great trials of his faith, and now he's looking with confidence to what God has done. Contrast that he spoke to Abimelech with this. The Lord, the God of heaven, he didn't cause me to wander. He brought me out of my father's household and my native land. And he spoke to me and he promised me an oath, saying to your offspring, I'll give this land. This is triumphant language. This is Abraham who has grown as a man of God. He's grown in his stature of faith. And he learns now, when he speaks of the ways of God, not to mumble, not to complain, not to just say, well, this is where I've ended up and I didn't fancy it, but this is where I am. We'll just face things, que sera, sera, this is where I am. That's not Abraham here. He's confident. He speaks of God's purposes. My friend, can I challenge you in the year ahead? When you speak of where you are, when you speak of your choices, when you speak of what you face, speak of the purposes of God. Speak of how he's brought you to that point. Speak of your confidence. Yes, to a believer. Yes, to an unbeliever. Take every opportunity to speak of your confidence that God has brought you to that point. And God will lead you ahead. Take every opportunity to be confident that his way is always right. He sees the bigger picture here even in the midst of his grief. And he calls him the Lord, the God of heaven, realizing that God has got a much, much bigger plan. And we see too here in his choice of a wife that he doesn't want a wife who's mixed, who's going to lead Isaac astray. He's exemplifying for us that great principle to be in the world, but not to be of the world. His mission was to the Canaanites, but he wanted to have that great principle of being separate. He was a traveler. He was not of their blood. And he wanted his son of promise, Isaac, to be a worshipper of God at the very center of his life. When we compromise with the world, our spiritual life always suffers. Abraham has found that to his own cost, and he didn't want that for Isaac. So to choose a wife from a believing family. And just before we move on, let's just notice one thing about Rebekah, Isaac's new wife, that just as Abraham's faith was huge, we don't often mention this in this passage, but think about her faith. Wasn't Rebekah's faith just as huge as Abraham's? Look at her when the servant turns up and says the story and calls her to come and to marry Isaac. She's never met the man, but she chooses to go, doesn't she? All the way through, there's great faith. Look at verse 31 of chapter 24. This is Laban professing the Lord. He says, "Come, you who are blessed by the Lord," to the servant. He said, "Why are you standing out here? I've prepared the house and a place for the camels. Come in." He recognizes that God is with him. Verses 50 and 51, we see that that Rebekah's mother there is a believing woman. Laban and Bethuel answered, "This is from the Lord. We can say nothing to you one way or the other. Here is Rebekah. Take her and go, and let her become the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has directed." Great faith there from Rebekah's mother. And then later on, verses 57, when they call Rebekah to go, they say to her, "Let's call the girl and ask her about it, whether she wants to go." So they called her, Rebekah, and asked her, "Will you go with this man?" And she says, "I will go." What great faith. Laban, Bethuel, and Rebekah. She was prepared to journey. They'd asked her to stay 10 days, but she was ready to go because she wanted to honor that which the purpose of God has laid out for her when she was called to go. My friends, may we have faith. Faith to believe that the purposes of God are for our good, even if it means that some of us have to go and leave everything we know. Rebekah was leaving her whole life and family. And she was going to a strange land. Yes, Abraham had done that before, but Rebekah was about to do it because she believed that God had sent not just Abraham, but his servant. And she said, "Yes, I will go and I will be with him." Great faith, exemplary faith for us. And then finally, chapter 25. The very last days of Abraham. And here again, with the same theme, we see Abraham passing on what he had to others. We see, first of all, that after Sarah had died, he did take another wife, Keturah, and he had children with her. You can see that they're listed there. I'm not going to attempt them as Vincent did. Six children were born to him, and all of those children grew into great nations. But did you notice, verse 5, where all of Abraham's possessions went? Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac. He didn't split it amongst all of his children. At least eight of them that we know of, Ishmael and Isaac and six here. He didn't divide them up. He gave everything he had to Isaac. Why? Because Isaac was the one. He was the child of promise. He was the one that God had promised and chosen. He was the one that the Lord told them about even before he was born. He was the seed through whom God would spiritually bless many, many nations. And here is Abraham, even in his latter days, showing great faith. It's difficult to show great faith in the midst of the rough and tumble of family life, isn't it? The children are around, they're making a lot of noise. It's hard to get a quiet time. The grandchildren demand your attention. There are so many things you've got to help them with in ordinary life. It's so hard sometimes to be a spiritual example to them. But here's Abraham not losing his faith or his focus on the promise of God. Remember that fourfold promise he was told, that through you all the nations of the world will be blessed. And he knew Isaac was the one. It was through him that God would reach through his seed to send a Messiah to bless all the world. So he left everything he had to Isaac. Everything he had. He was generous. He gave gifts, verse 6, to the others. While he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines. I have to just say, we don't exactly know who they are, the sons of his concubines. We don't know. It may just be a reference to Ishmael there. We know that he was generous to Ishmael as well, and that Ishmael went off to the east. But we don't know of any others. We haven't been given all of the details. It's possible it may be referring to his nephews there. We know his brother had concubines and had many children through those. So it's possible it may be talking about his nephews rather than his own sons. Sometimes in Hebrew the word sons is used when it means grandchildren or nephews. We certainly don't read of any other children that Abraham had or any other wives and no other concubines apart from Ishmael that we know of course, through Hagar. Abraham was generous to them all, but he gave the biggest to Isaac. And I suppose this mirrors really the grace of God, doesn't it, in many ways? God is generous to all, isn't he? Don't we have common grace in the world? Doesn't God bless all? Common grace, general grace? He gives to all of the world, he does. But then there is special grace, isn't there? To those who are his privileged, his chosen ones, the children of promise, those who are his inheritance. My friend, you've been a double recipient of grace if you're in Christ this evening. You've been the recipient of his general grace. He has kept you and fed you and clothed you and led you and shown you and given you all kinds of things in families and homes. But then many of us have tasted of his special grace too. And he's given, as it were, all that he has. That picture, I think, of verse 5 is prophetic. It's spiritual. It's got so much fulfillment of God leaving everything he has to his children of promise. God, as it were, as we heard this morning, investing the joys and the privileges of his presence and his fellowship to those that are now kings and priests and sons of God and heirs of God and heirs, joint heirs with Christ, leaving them all to him. We're so rich in Christ when he blesses us that way. And here is Abraham recognizing and looking to the fulfillment of God's promises through this particular son. Well, Abraham finally died, verse 7, at 175 years old. I think verse 8 is a true statement, isn't it? He breathed his last and died at a good old age. I think we could say that would be right, wouldn't it, for 175. And we have this quite moving account of his sons coming together, verse 9. Isaac and Ishmael, the one chosen and the one not. The one of promise and the one sent away. The one who would support the work of God and the one who would oppose it. The one who would bring great blessing to his people and the one who would bring great heartbreak and opposition to the people of God. These two sons, the heads of great nations, they come together and they bury Abraham, as it were, showing us a fulcrum, a divide, a seesaw, a tipping point for all of the rest of the spiritual history of the Bible. Here were these two men, both from the flesh, as it were, of Abraham, but one a son of faith and of promise, and the other who would wander far away and not walk in the ways of his father. Here are these two great nations there at his burial. And as they bury their father and then part and say their goodbyes, as far as we're to see, they are never to meet again. It was their final moment as they buried their father. But you see what it says about Abraham? He was gathered to his people. Look at those words at the end of verse 8. He was gathered to his people. It's a bit of a strange phrase. He's being buried there in a place where none of his ancestors were being buried. They laid him there, a long, long way away from where his father and his grandfather
was buried. There, laid beside Sarah, look, verse 9, in the cave at Machpelah, near Mamre, in the fields of Ephron, the field Abraham had bought from the Hittites. There, Abraham was buried with his wife, Sarah. So, how could the Bible be true? He was gathered to his people. Is he talking just about, in sort of poetic language, about Abraham being laid next to the wife that he loved? Well, I think it's far more than that. It can't refer to his ancestors. It can't refer to the people of the Ur of the Chaldeans. Surely, it's referring here that Abraham is laid with his spiritual ancestors, with those who have trusted God, with those who have gone ahead, and those who will come after. Surely it means that Abraham there has been gathered to his people, the people of God. This is a spiritual term, surely. Surely Abraham was taken beyond the grave to the one to whom he looked. Hebrews 11 describes that Abraham lived his life looking for that which was lasting. Hebrews 11 and verse 10 describes of Abraham, for he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. When Abraham was gathered to his people, he was gathered to the children of God. Gathered to those who were looking for Christ. Gathered there with the Old Testament saints. Gathered there with the prophets. Gathered there with all who have died in Jesus Christ. Looking for his coming. Looking for his reappearing. Looking for life with him in glory. My friends, the only real hope in life is to be in the hands of God. And when you're in the hands of God and living and trusting in the promise of God, death is no end. And death doesn't threaten. And it's almost as if Moses, the writer here, is saying to us, Abraham lived his life in faith, and at the end, in his very moment, even when he's buried, he was still looking to God and to the fulfillment of his promises in Jesus Christ. There's nothing more that you could do for your family than that. Lead them that pathway. There's nothing more you can do for the people you live amongst and work amongst. There's nothing better you can tell them. There's no greater story you can share with them than living and dying, trusting God. People who around you who are facing suffering and illness, people who have lost their will to live, there's nothing better you can tell them than to live and to die, trusting God, looking to Him, knowing Him in the midst of all of these times and seasons. And look at verse 11 as a sort of an epitaph. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Beer Lahai Roi. God blessed his son Isaac, just as Abraham had trusted and longed, so that Isaac too would follow in his footsteps and learn to trust God. Oh, I pray that all of our children and grandchildren would learn to trust God, not just as we do, but even more than we do. That they might be examples of faith. We haven't got time to look at what happened to Isaac and Jacob. That's another series for another day. But let me give the final word to God. How did God describe Abraham's life? As we reflect on how he trusted God, even through the loss of his wife, even through the searching for a wife for his son, and even in his own death, and the dealing with a larger family. As we see Abraham trusting God in these latter days of his life, what did God say of Abraham? Yes, he had many flaws. We've seen his flaws. We've seen how he lied about Sarah. We've seen how he failed some of the tests of prosperity. You remember how he was afraid in the midst of a famine? We've seen the flaws of his life. And then we've seen those great moments of heroic faith and triumph. There on the top of the mountain. There as he went to rescue Lot. There as he labored in prayer for God over Lot and his family. As he trusted God in the midst of those times. Great faith as he set out for that far distant nation. A man of faith. How did God summarize the life of Abraham? Well, turn over one page and you'll see. Chapter 26, verses 4 and 5. This is God speaking now to Isaac, his son, and describing his father.
You'll see verse 2, the Lord appeared to Isaac and said, and he gives him instructions, and then down in verses 4 and 5, this is what the Lord said. I will make your descendants, that's to Isaac, renewing the covenant, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and will give them all these lands, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed, because Abraham obeyed me and kept my requirements, my commands, my decrees, and my laws. What a great thing to say of someone. Will your children say of you, he kept God's requirements, she kept God's commands, God's decrees, and God's laws. We live in a day and generation where no one keeps them. Not even Christians. What a difference it would make at the end of your life if people were to say you'd lived like that. My friends, we have days left. The Lord has spared us. We may not live to 175. But let us take the example of Abraham's faith. And let us be people of God's requirements, God's commands, God's decrees, God's laws. God fulfilled his covenant to Abraham and did bless Isaac and Jacob and did send us the great deliverer, the Messiah of Christ through his seed. He did keep his promise. He gave that whole land to Abraham's descendants. He kept his part of the bargain. May we keep ours and be people of faith and trust God. Whatever we face in the years that are ahead.